Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which of course means on this Tuesday, I was in Ashburn for the introductory press conference of the new GM, Adam Peters, Josh Harris, and Peters took questions from the media today. I'll share with you guys what was said there, some first impressions of the new head of the front office and what's to come. We'll get to that in a moment. In addition, today's guest, a guy who's been on here many times, former Washington head coach Jay Gruden, got Jay's view on the playoffs, what he thought of Ben Johnson and some of the other potential head coaching candidates or potential head coaches here in Washington, how they fared, about the transition that most of these candidates, Ben Johnson, Bobby Slowick, and others, the transition from being a coordinator to a coach, because obviously Jay did that back in the day from Cincinnati to coming here, and a whole bunch more, including his interesting last 24 hours on social media, getting into Twitter feuds, beefs, sort of, some things, with Robert Griffin III and Brian Mitchell. So I did ask Jay those questions. So we'll get to all that in a moment here on the podcast. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. I'll have a story up in the morning on the positive vibes surrounding Adam Peters that extend far beyond the team facility here. So check that out on The Athletic for likely Wednesday morning. Okay, so let's get to just a couple things here about the press conference held at 2 o'clock today inside the team facility in Ashburn, the auditorium in there where they've now had the majority of their press conferences. As I said, Harris and Peters came out together. This has been two press conferences in the last week with Harris. Both, when they say it's going to start at 2 o'clock, like they are coming out at 2 o'clock. There's no dawdling, whatever's going on behind the scenes, they come out. The setting was, you know, kind of what you would expect for these types of events. Adam Peters, his family was there, his wife Jen, their two young daughters who were well-behaved throughout the process. Some of the minority or limited partners, I should say, were sitting in the front row, Mark Ein and Mitchell Rails. Peters' agent, Doug Hendrickson with Wasserman, was there as well, and some others, of course, with the organization. Harris came out, made some comments about, you know, how they landed on Peters, that they're looking for a certain type of leader and feel that because of his background and the teams that he's been on, Peters began as a scout with the Patriots, a scout with the Broncos, and then came over to the 49ers in that time, won three Super Bowls, went to others, including one with San Francisco in 2019. He's had very interesting experiences, and, you know, Harris said, quote, "We set out to find a leader, someone who can take this franchise to the next level and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships. In Adam, I think we have the right leader," end quote. Kind of thing you would expect to hear on such a day. Peters gave a very long introductory remarks. He thanked a bunch of people who helped him get to this point throughout his career, including his family, his father, his late mother, a coach at UCLA, Don Johnson, the 49ers organization, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, who was the one that made Peters his first front office hire when he took over San Francisco's front office in 2017. And, you know, from there, he, you know, I'd be lying if I said he gave us a ton of specifics. I asked him, not what are you going to do with the number two pick, but what kind of options it presents. And he kind of really just said, well, we got a long ways to go for that. He was asked about, what else was he asked about? He was asked about all kinds of things. I'm looking here through the notes. He said, thoughts on the current roster. He said, quote, I believe that there's a few cornerstone pieces in this roster. I believe we have a lot of work to do, and that's just evaluating everybody, and that's going to start with the coaches. When we hire a head coach, we sit down together with the personnel department, and we sit down and evaluate everything and figure out where we need to be, end quote. What else? He said, when it came to qualities he's looking for in a head coach, the question he was asked about offense or defense, he said, basically, we want a leader. It is not necessarily about offense or defense. We want somebody to be a leader. So I know a lot of you want them to take an offensive mind and put that in as the head coach, especially with that number two pick that likely we think would be a quarterback. What he's saying could just be the generic things you say, but at the same time, I as you guys have kind of heard me say, I'm not like 1,000,000% saying that it's going to be Ben Johnson, but it could be. The leadership qualities, that's what you don't know always about a coordinator transitioning to becoming a coach, and that is something, as I said, I talked to Jay Gruden about that we'll get to in a few minutes. He talked about just sort of lessons learned over the years he admitted various failures without specifying what they were, but he said, you learn more from the losses than you do the wins. He was asked about whether Washington being relatively a blank canvas was interesting to him for a way to put a stamp on the organization. And he said, quote, it was everything to me. This opportunity with this ownership group in this place, I can't tell you how much that meant to me and our family, end quote. And so that was kind of, some of the highlights of what he had to say. Like I said, he didn't say we're going to re-sign Cam Curl and Kendall Fuller. He didn't say we're taking a quarterback. He didn't say Sam Howell is out or Sam Howell is in. It'll be a little bit. He also didn't get into what happens with the current executives on the roster. I mentioned to you guys in the last episode that I think it feels more to me possible, if not likely, that Martin Mayhew ends up staying because Peters and Mayhew know each other from their time in San Francisco. I don't know what role Mayhew would have since he is currently the GM or was last year. But, I don't see that being necessarily an issue if he's given a, sizable role underneath Peters. We'll see how that goes. And, of course, who else ends up coming here? Peters did say, of course, he wants to build through the draft, which is kind of what you'd expect from somebody who was a college scout for many years. So, I think Peters, he didn't come in with some, rah-rah sound. He wasn't, he seemed to be genuine with his responses. Didn't feel like there was a lot of, trying to win the press conference. And I'm not just saying that because I wrote what my last story about Ron Rivera was. I'm just saying in general, his personality was kind of low-key in that regard. So, presumably we will see him maybe next week if they hire a head coach by then. So we may be very close to hearing from Adam Peters again, but this was the first time he did that. I think from a writer perspective, I don't think he said anything that was particularly, wow, headline kind of stuff. And maybe that's a great thing for the broader view because he didn't make headlines with anything he said today. It was a pretty standard, normal, formal introduction, and we go from there. So that was Adam Peters today making his first comment as the new GM of the Washington Commanders. There were a couple of players milling about. I don't actually know if any of them were in the auditorium. They have the reporter sit kind of way up front. So if people filled in the back, I couldn't say, but I saw F.A. Albada on crutches, post-surgery walking around. Someone else said they saw Sam Cosmi. So I imagine there were a couple people around, and maybe they even stuck their head into the press conference themselves. So that's it for what we got today out of Adam Peters. I did speak with a lot of people around the league, not just the last few days, but really over the last, you know, few weeks, few months, you know. It feels like, you know, it feels like Betty White had like the best Q rating out there. Nobody disliked Betty White. I mean, at the moment, I don't know. It feels like everybody's all in on Adam Peters, and I don't just mean people in this building. I mean, kind of anybody I spoke with. There's always somebody out there with a negative comment. I've yet to find that person. I'm not saying I'm looking for it. I'm just saying those I've spoken with seem very high on the guy who's viewed as one of the better town evaluators, an excellent communicator, and certainly seems like a nice guy. So we'll see. Positive stuff there. And obviously, when you make such a hire, it often feels like I won't say anything is possible, but, you know, that getting out of the hole this franchise has been seems doable. It's all going to come down to, obviously, what choices are made. There's plenty to make, starting with the head coach, and then they go from there. All right, so speaking of head coaches, Jay Gruden, of course, had this job as head coach from 2014 to 2019. I spoke with him this morning about, you know, that transition from coordinator to coach. And, you know, his impressions of the various candidates and, yes, what was going on Twitter with him, RG3, and Brian Mitchell. So let's get to that right now here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, joining us here, former Washington head coach Jay Gruden, who, like the rest of us, was watching all the games this weekend. Unlike the rest of us, he got into some interesting Twitter views last night. We'll get to that in a second. But first off, Happy New Year. How are things going in your world?
Happy New Year. Everything's good down here in Florida. Been down here for a little while and having some fun and playing a little golf and watching some ball.
You're missing all the snow. We got like 4 or 5 inches yesterday.
I'm not missing that at all.
Neither am I. I guess I don't have to miss it because I'm here. I'm not a snow is a big 180 for me in my life. Kid, amazing. Adult, ugh, such a hassle. And I got to drive out to Ashburn today because they're doing the Adam Peters press conference, so I can't even just stay in the house all day. All right, nobody wants to hear about that. Let's start with this. I was going to ask you about Dallas and Philly, like how things just imploded for them. The Eagles were the last game of the night, and their season just completely tanked down the stretch. I'll lead into something else after that. What do you make of what happened to Philly this year? How did things go so wrong?
I don't know. They looked good early in the year. They had some defensive struggles early in the year, but they were winning games. And then offense just couldn't keep up. I think when you play poor defense and the offense has to score every time they have the ball, it's hard. And then Jalen struggled a little bit. The offensive line struggled systematically. I don't know what kind of plan they have to pick up blitzes, but it's not a very good one. That's the issue I had last night. I just hate watching guys free off the edge or free up the middle. And they just never really had a plan. I don't know if Jalen wasn't seeing it or wasn't adjusting the line or they didn't have any max protection calls or what have you. But they just didn't look very prepared, in my opinion. And Jalen just didn't have an answer for anything Tampa did. And that was the case for, you know, that last 5 or 6 games down the stretch.
You know, the when you go back to the beginning of the year, Washington played Philly in week 4 and then like week 8, I want to say. And those were 2 games that maybe Washington's 2 best games of the year, frankly, even though they lost both. One went to overtime. The other one came down to the end of the game. Sam Howell's pretty good in both. And I remember thinking in both cases, like, it didn't feel like Philly was, like, playing that great. They just were good enough to win, and you kept waiting for them to turn it around. I kind of wonder if they ever just were good this year, like, to a degree. I mean, it's like with the 2020 Steelers team that started, like, 11-0. Washington was the one that beat them. And anyway, the whole time I was like, I don't know. But because they just made the Super Bowl, we're like, oh, I guess they're going to turn it around.
Well, everybody thought with the big draft pick from Georgia, their defensive line was going to dominate Fletcher Cox and obviously Son Reddick and Sweat, that they were going to get pressure galore, and that just never materialized. And then the coverage, the secondary, just took a beating. You know, Darius Slay is a good player, obviously, but Bradbury struggled all year long. Their nickel struggled. Their safety struggled. Obviously, Blankenship was out yesterday, and that hurt them a little bit, but they just couldn't cover anything. They can't play man-to-man. They didn't know where to go in zone, so they changed coordinators to Matt Patricia, and he obviously didn't have an answer either. I don't know if it's more – I think it's probably a little more personnel related. They're not good enough linebacker. They try to get Cunningham back there, but he's struggling mightily in the middle of the defense. So they got a lot of issues on defense moving forward. And they're getting older. Brandon Graham's getting older. Fletcher Cox is getting older. Slay's getting older. So they got some issues moving forward.
And Hurts in general, I mean, obviously he was really good last year. You know, he still didn't have a ton of resume lined relative to other quarterbacks when they get those massive contracts. It seemed like maybe, and I thought this in real time, like a little early, but you know, if you have a quarterback, you think it's good. It's hard to just, well, you know, go roll the dot. You know, if you think you need to have a guy, you probably have to keep them. Other than if you're Bruce Allen, when he was the president, when you were coaching here, then that doesn't happen. But what do you kind of make of him this year? And like, did you see anything that made you concerned about where his career is going or?
Yeah, very concerned. And I think a lot has to do with I don't think he really played a game healthy. You know, his legs were hurting a little bit, and he had a back, then he had a finger last night. Jalen is at his best when he can really run the ball, like a Josh Allen type. Josh Allen threw for 220 yards the other day and had 75 yards rushing a touchdown. That's the way Jalen needs to play for him to be successful. He's got to run for first downs. Their offense isn't good enough to convert third downs by passing all the time, and the passing game is not good enough, especially without A.J. Brown. So he's got to be more involved in the running game, and it's going to take him being healthy next year to do it. So moving forward, they have to get him back more, get him more as a ball carrier and a thrower, be a little bit more balanced, get some better running backs too. I don't like the size of their running backs. They're little. They got to be able to push the pile a little bit more and be more physical, because they do have a pretty good offensive line. They just have little backs, and Jalen's not taking off like he used to.
Well, it sounds like Jason Kelce is retiring. At least that was the story today. So, you know, obviously that's a huge deal. The whole tush push thing sort of goes with with him leading the way. So, you know, we'll see how they adjust to that. But it's a different deal possibly going forward. All right. So let's get to this Twitter fun stuff. You're watching Hurts. You tweeted. If I ever put a QB through what Philly is putting Jalen through, I apologize. Pick up a blitz! ! Cool. I mean, you know, I get it. You know, he's going through some tough, and that would have been the end of that until somebody quote tweeted you. I don't have the quote in front of me, but it's RG3 putting up like a, I don't know what his deal is. He likes putting up these pictures of himself making like weird posts.
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't know if he was implying that he wasn't prepared. And if he wasn't prepared, I was like, you weren't prepared, Robert. And I apologize. That's my fault. But I thought Sean McVay was a good offensive coordinator. And we had a pretty good staff to get him ready to go. But if he didn't feel like he was ready, that's on me.
Well, so, I mean, I guess the impression I sort of got was he's inferring that, I guess, that you left him out to you or the play calling, whatever, left him out to dry, thus led to. You know, he took a lot of sacks. I had it here. Hold on one sec. Somebody put up a stat on, I hadn't looked this up yet, but somebody with the name Hippie Sinatra put this up. I'm sure Hippie Sinatra has it right. That RG3 was the 12th most sacked quarterback in 2014. A year later with Kirk Cousins, it was 26th most sacked. And obviously you were the coach for both. And it's, I remember in real time when you guys went from Cousins to RG3, it just seemed that Kirk had a better feel for when to get rid of the ball. That's not the only component of quarterbacking, but what we're talking about here, is that when you look at it, is that kind of how you felt it was?
Yeah. I like to think we took pass protection very seriously. Unfortunately, we lost Alex Smith because of a pass protection flaw. So we weren't perfect by any stretch. I was commenting on the game last night. I didn't want to go back to bring up old stories and old results of our team. Obviously, we had a quarterback competition. Robert was hurt with the Shanahans, and he never really fully recovered, in my opinion, mentally or physically. And unfortunately, Kirk just outplayed him in practice and in game. So we went to Kirk. There's nothing personal against Robert. And like I said, if he felt like he's unprepared, that's on me. But Kirk did a great job for us and obviously made a lot of money moving forward.
I remember 2015 was like the first year I think I went to Richmond for training camp, and I remember watching in like 7-on-7 drills, and it seemed like RG3 was, and this is my unexpert opinion, was like holding the ball too long, even in that stuff. And that was, to me, was like, I don't think this is going to work. If you're not, I mean, there's no defense or, you know, whatever. And then obviously you made the move to go to Cousins at the end of preseason, basically. Was that, I, 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 I don't really want to get into like what happened in 2015, but it's to the point of like I'm trying to think like what he's thinking here, because it seemed to me like he was struggling to get rid of, identify what to do with the ball, which led to essentially the sacks.
Yeah, we had a bad preseason game against Detroit. He got sacked a lot, and everybody criticized me for leaving him in the game because we had a couple backup linemen that were playing, and I just wanted to try to get a positive drive going in that game, but we kept getting sacked, and a couple of them were protection issues, and I wanted to make sure we got the communication right, and a lot of people thought I left him in, and I probably did, but as a coach, and you're playing that poorly in a preseason, you're starting quarterback, you want to have some kind of success before your first game of the year, so that's probably on me for leaving him in too much on that one. But overall, I don't think anybody can argue the fact that we had a competition. Kirk won it outright, and Kirk played extremely well and kept the job and moved on and has made a hell of a career for himself.
You know, I should have said this at the start. Can you set the scene? You said you're in Florida. What are you doing? Where are you at watching these games? Like, what's the deal? You know, you got chips in one hand, a drink in the other. Like, what's going on?
No, I'm just watching them at the house, just chilling out, listening to it. I like to listen to the commentary and watch the games. And, you know, me and my wife just sitting around watching the game.
All right, so RG3 comes in, quote tweets you. You go back at him with the prepared comment. Are you like laughing at this? Like you're trying to watch the game and all of a sudden like your night is getting completely derailed.
You know, I've never really been critical of another coaching staff really too much, you know, but now that I'm pretty much out of coaching, I think I can probably let loose a little bit more. And I'm just getting to know this Twitter thing a little bit more and learning it. It's probably a bad thing because I'm reading some of the comments, I'm getting destroyed, and some people are supportive, some people are just angry and mean. I don't know what to make of it. It's not that big a deal to me. I was just having fun retweeting them, and I'm never going to bash Robert. I know he tried his ass off for us, and I tried to get him ready to play, but unfortunately, Kirk just beat him out.
All right, so you're dealing with the RG3 thing, and relatively speaking, I mean, he obviously escalated to a degree, but I don't know. Like I said, he's putting up pictures of himself. He's kind of being playful to a degree, but like, yeah. You know. But then, like, off the top rope, his tag team partner, to some degree, comes in, Brian Mitchell, who's, you know, love B-Mitch. He comes in, and he starts giving you grief, and you guys start going back and forth. What do you say in your house when all of a sudden you're like, wait, now I got two people coming at me?
Yeah, Roberts was more of a playful thing. He just kind of gave me a look or whatever. It's not that big a deal. And I just said, well, you weren't prepared, Robert. That was not that big a deal. But B-Mitch, he went to a whole new level. Like, just go away. Leave. I never did anything to B-Mitch, but obviously B-Mitch never liked me. He's ripped me in the media for many, many years. And now it's just another opportunity for him to try to jump off the top rope, like you said, and get on me. But B-Mitch has never, ever said a good word about a coach in the D.C. market. So that just comes with the territory. You know, if you're going to coach here, get ready to get ripped on by B-Mitch. No big deal.
Well, I won't read all the quotes or all the tweets back and forth, but you guys did go to it, and it was funny. This morning you ended it. I don't know, but you said the Will Ferrell picture with boy that escalated quickly.
Then I said, why don't you he's ripped on every coach in D.C. Why don't you come back to coach B-Mitch? The punt return team would be sick, you know. And I left it at that. That's enough.
Obviously, so you got there in 2014. I don't know what was going on. Like you said, you know, B-Mitch is certainly an opinionated guy, and maybe he had some thoughts about what was, I don't know, coaching the team, what have you. But I remember in 2019 when Dwayne Haskins was a rookie, that there was this conversation about, is he not getting enough reps with the first team in practices? And was that the reason why he wasn't playing or this, that, and the other? And then B-Mitch and Chris Thompson got into it on Twitter over this because Chris Thompson was defending you. And I remember I wrote about this, that even like Adrian Peterson was, I talked to, and he was like, seems like the practice reps are normal for everywhere I've ever gone. So that's the only thing I could imagine with you and B-Mitch as to why he might've had an issue. But yeah, that was wild. I'm not going to lie.
Well, if you don't have success as a coach here in this market, which we didn't have success my last couple of years, and then you're going to get shredded by a lot of people. But he just was constant through my whole career there. He's got his right. He's got opinion. He's got his own show, and he's got a microphone. So he's going to continue to spew off whatever he wants, whether it's right or wrong or whether it hurts somebody's feelings or not. Never bothers me, though, because I'm used to it. I've grown up in the coaching business for my entire life, and I understand how people are, and they're going to be. And now that there's this social media out there, it's even worse. So you just got to, in one ear, out the other, water off a duck's back, whatever it is, and move forward with your life.
You know, you mentioned your family background. Obviously, you know, your dad was in coaching, your brother, you grew up in that, you know, you were hanging out at Notre Dame and all these places. And then you start playing on your own. So you were in this stuff. So even though, like, you were a first time head coach when you came here from Cincinnati, regardless of how long your resume was at that point of being a coach or a coordinator, you had been in this your whole life, basically, to a degree. And what's interesting is now we're seeing Washington is trying to figure out the next coach. And when you look at guys like Ben Johnson, he's been a coordinator for 2 years. I don't know his family background, but I'm not aware of a lifelong thing like yours. You know, one wonder for me is, like, how do you make that adjustment from coordinator to coach? It is such a different job. How much different of a job is it? And how much do you think your own personal background helped you navigate that transition?
It helped me a lot because I was a head coach before. I know it's not the NFL, but it was Arena League, and you still had to lead people and set up schedules and do all those things, handle adversity. So I had a little bit of experience, not to the extent of coaching in this area, but it was helpful. Moving forward for guys like Ben Johnson and these guys who've never been head coaches, the biggest change is managing other coaches. You know, he's going to be fine with the players. He relates to them fine. He's going to call a good game. He knows X's and O's. That's not the issue. It's going to be who he's going to hire on a staff and how he manages those guys. That's the toughest thing because, you know, you got to put together a list of who you want as defensive coordinator. You're not going to be able to get the guys that you necessarily want. So you're going to have another list, and a B list and a C list, and find your best D-line coach. Who's that going to be? It's going to work with your coordinator, an O-line coach. And it's not easy to find coaches nowadays. There are a lot of coaches that are available now because they just got let go. So that's a good thing. But still, it's going to be difficult to have him find his own guys. And then he's got to find out which franchise is best for him as far as quarterback is concerned. If I were him, I would look very closely at this draft, at Drake May and Caleb Williams and obviously Jaden Daniels. And if he feels like those guys are the future of the franchise, and I would jump at this opportunity. If he didn't feel like those guys were good enough, I'd probably err on the side of going somewhere else. But I think this market, having the number two pick, will be perfect for a guy like Ben, because he can mold the quarterback that he wants. He can start fresh. Just the key is for him to get the right people in place. Who's going to be the personnel guy? Who's going to make those decisions is also critical. Does he want full control? Does he want that as a young coach? I would probably err on the side of hiring a good GM to help him, like they did from San Francisco. I think that's a great match, a young kid and a young kid working together, and then have some veteran people on staff to help him out, make some other decisions, help make other decisions as well. But yeah, I think it'd be a perfect fit.
You mentioned the new GM, Adam Peters. I there's been a lot of talk that Ben Johnson is the one they want. We'll see. A lot of teams, I think, are probably in that position as well. I don't know the relationship between Ben Johnson and Adam Peters. When you go, like, for you, right, you already knew Bruce before. And so at least it was, I don't know, to some degree, some comfort in that, I presume. If you don't know the GM, but the GM's already there, and it's a first-year GM as well, does that make you a little nervous about the situation because you don't quite know what's going to happen? Or, hey, you know what? This guy's got a really good reputation. Let me roll the dice and presume that, you know, he is good at what he does and he'll help my cause.
Yeah, it does make you a little bit nervous. You got to get to know him in an interview, and it's going to take some time. It's not a two-hour interview. It's going to be a long day, 2 day, 3 day type interview. You got to get to know exactly what roles people are playing in the organization. Who's got the final say on the second pick in the draft? Who's got the final say on keeping or losing a free agent or signing a free agent? Those are the most critical decisions moving forward. A fourth round pick, managing the roster. That's the most important part. I've always said it's about the players, not the plays, so to speak. You got to get good players in here. That'll make Ben Johnson a better coach. If you don't have good players in here, Washington will be looking for a new coach in 2 or 3 years again.
So I don't know what your thoughts have been on Ben Johnson all year. He obviously had a game this weekend and the Lions won, a huge win for that city and that franchise. They get off to a huge lead, but then they only score 3 points over the last 36 minutes. Do you come out of that game thinking, okay, I see why Ben Johnson is, you know, everybody's really excited, or do you have a different view after watching? And I know one game doesn't change
like
overall
I said,
impression, but
probably there's a lot of coaches out there that could come in here and draw up plays and be successful calling an offense with the players that they have at Detroit. Can you turn that around and manage a team like Washington and with the players that they have here? Obviously Eric Bieniemy had a lot more success at Kansas City because of the players that he did here at Washington. You know, it's not, he didn't get dumber. He just didn't have quite the weapons in the arsenal that Kansas City had. So it's very difficult moving forward. That's why I keep mentioning it. Ben's got to really look at this draft and make sure that Drake May is the guy they want, or if it's Caleb Williams or whoever they're going to get moving forward for this franchise to be successful, because you can draw up the greatest playbook in America, but it's not going to work if you don't have that trigger man calling the plays.
You obviously are an offensive guy. Like that's the where you come into the NFL game from. If they don't get Ben Johnson, most of the other main candidates are guys on the defensive side. Dan Quinn, Raheem Morris, whose defense was going up against Ben Johnson and others. There's some notion of, hey, look, it's better to get an offensive coach because if he's good, then you have somebody to stay. But if you get a defensive coach and he has an offensive coordinator that's good, he's going to get plucked and used to replace this position all the time. But there's also a notion that the defensive guys maybe are a little more about the sort of setting a tone in the locker room or things like that. What do you kind of make of that? Would you, like, all things be equal, go offense, or does that not, it does not matter as much to you?
I personally would go offense just because of the draft selection that they have. Now, if they don't get the offensive guy that they want, then defensive guys like Raheem Morris would be a great fit just because he's a great communicator, great leader of men, which is very important. And I'm sure he could find an offensive coordinator that can get right. But you're right. You have to worry. If he comes in here and does well in his first year, then you're going to lose your coordinator to head coach somewhere else. But that's why you still have to coach your other coaches. You know, it's not just your coordinator. Your quarterback coach has to be ready to step up in a year or two. Your wide receiver coach, or maybe your running back coach, whoever it might be, they have to be able to step up and fill the void if something happens to your coordinator. So not just coaching your coordinators, you got to coach your other coaches to make sure they're prepared and ready to go when time is needed.
What'd you make of Dallas?
Yeah, it's just unfortunate. You know, Green Bay took the opening kick and went right down their throat. And it was 7-0. Then Dallas, had the unfortunate punt, and it was 14-0. And right there, it was panic-stricken time. And then the pick six happened, and they got down. So they got hit right in the face early and just couldn't get back up off the rope, man. So that's unfortunate for them. They had a good year. Dak had a sensational year. But defensively, they just are not even close to where they need to be in order to stop the run and play big boy football this time of year.
Is it boggle your mind that Mike McCarthy, after 3-12 win regular seasons, could be out because they struggle in the postseason?
Yeah, no, nothing boggles my mind anymore. You know, Doug Peterson got fired at Philadelphia, he won a Super Bowl, and Brother got fired at Tampa, he won a Super Bowl. You know, this coaching thing, you're not going to last. It's a very tough job. The coaches that do last are very fortunate, very lucky, and typically they've had very good quarterback with them for a long time. Sean Payton and Drew Brees, Mike Tomlin and Big Ben, and obviously Belichick and Tom Brady. Those guys kind of go through the tough times and the good times together, and they build their team around that guy. That's why this job is very appealing, because they have an opportunity to build this franchise with that number two pick for a very long time. So you can get a coach right now. If this quarterback is who you think he is, they'll be around together for a very long time.
Obviously, it's hard to say, you know, who's the best candidate, because you've got to talk to them and, you know, study them beyond whatever you've already done. That said, if you were Washington, who would, of the names that are out there, who would be the one that you'd say, I got to go look at this guy?
I would look at, obviously, Ben Johnson's great. I would look at Slowick for Houston. I think what they've done at Houston, he comes from the 49er background a little bit. So he the same style of offense, kind of. But what they did with C.J. Stroud and that young offense was very impressive to me. I would look at him. For sure. Those are the top two on offense I would look at. And then defensively, like you mentioned, Raheem Morris would be fine. Obviously, the coach at Baltimore is a very good defensive coach. I'd start with those four. I look at Vrabel, too. I talked to Vrabel. I think Vrabel's a very tough guy. And sometimes you need a tough physical type coach in here. Just depends on who his offensive coordinator would be. But Vrabel would be another guy to talk to. And obviously, I mean, why wouldn't you call Belichick? Hell, he's won a few games in his career.
Yeah. Just a few, for sure. Well, look, I could keep you here all day talking about all these things. How, by the way, how'd your picks go this weekend?
My picks?
Yeah.
I took Philadelphia as my lock of the week.
Oh, so that's not so good.
I watched Tampa Bay play the last two games of the year, and they played Carolina. They won 9-0. They just didn't look very good offensively, and I thought Philly would get it right on defense eventually, and it didn't work out quite as well as I thought. It was a ass whooping.
Yeah, no, for sure. The NFC, my God, like it is really, you know, all year it kind of felt like it was San Francisco, and then I guess Dallas or Philly, but the NFC has been kind of weak this year, which you know, really makes Washington's year even kind of worse. Like it felt like at 4-13 was bad enough, but watching the playoffs, it's like felt worse.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you look at Green Bay, and Green Bay was, you know, had to win their last three to get in, and they look like the team to beat right now. They're playing, you know, Joe Barry's got the defense playing a lot better.
Your guy.
Obviously, the running game is a lot better with that, with you know, Aaron Jones, and obviously this quarterback is the real deal. I mean, I never saw that coming. Early in the season, he struggled a little bit, but he is throwing the ball extremely well. They have a great chance. I think it'll be them and Detroit. Obviously, Detroit's playing well, and San Fran's can be good to watch.
I'm an advocate of, if I'm drafting a quarterback, even in the first round, I'm not going to start that guy year one, all things being equal. I mean, you have to, yeah, hey, but some guys are just ready to go, like CJ Stroud. But in general, I don't want to start that guy because it just feels like there's too much pressure. They're probably on a bad team. And it's a small sample size, but like all the guys who seem to sit out a year or two, or in the case of Love and Aaron Rodgers, three, I don't know. They all seem to play pretty well. I'm sure there's an example I'm forgetting, but where, because obviously Washington is about to face this situation.
I think it depends on the quarterback and the style of play that the quarterback has. Is he a true drop back guy? Sometimes those guys take a little bit longer to see plays and the speed of the game and adjust. But some of these college teams are very similar to NFL offenses now. They're running a lot of the same concepts right now. So the transition isn't as hard as it used to be. If it's a more athletic guy like an Anthony Richardson, then he can play a little bit early because the quarterback design runs and things of that nature are easy for them to do. They're just athletic and they can handle it. But like I said, a true drop back guy, if you're going to throw all that information out on protections and concepts, you're right. That probably is better to sit out a year.
Yeah. Well, that'll be an interesting discussion to come up. All right. Jay Gruden, plug all your shows. You've got a lot of things going on. Tell everybody where they can find you with podcasts and elsewhere.
I'm on the 33rd team. I do its thing with JJ taking the points. Other than that, I do Grant and Danny every now. I think we're done with that because the season's over. So I think that's about it. And Chris Russell.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, look, we're going to hope that, you know, you enjoy Twitter and somehow avoid more, you know, random. Yeah, random.
I'm not a regular on Twitter, so I don't know. I just tweet every now and then and put it away. I don't even hardly read it. So.
There's a reason why a lot of us like having you on our podcast is because, you know, you shoot from the hip to a degree. You're willing to say stuff, and sometimes it's going to generate what happened yesterday.
My wife was on all morning today reading them. She's like, oh, my God, they brought that picture up again. Would you tell people it's not a doobie, it's a cigarette? I said, Jesus. Yeah.
Oh, people brought up that picture?
Yeah, 12 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. People
are ruthless.
They are. What an interesting life you have. Jay Gruden, I really appreciate it, man. Early morning talk. Enjoy the week. We'll see what happens in the preseason games. And, you know, we'll all be watching you on Twitter just to see what happens next.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks. All right. Many thanks to Jay Gruden for his time. Thanks to everyone for checking out the podcast. I didn't mention this at the top, but of course, make sure to check out other episodes we had. I spoke with Al Galdi earlier this week, and I had a bunch last week about the various aspects of Adam Peters coming on, the coaching search, and more. So make sure you can check out the the iTunes or Spotify, the list of the episodes, and you will see a bunch of good ones in the last several days, and honestly, you can go back for more if you want, but in terms of Peters and such, the last several days, I've put out a bunch of podcasts. Will I put out another one this week? I don't know, but the way you know for sure that you won't miss it is if you subscribe to the Standard Groom Only podcast. Thanks for doing that as well. But that is it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time, see ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.